There are noisy protests again this weekend in the streets of Paris. Charles de Ledesma has our report.
Scuffles have broken out between French yellow vest protesters and police in a 13th consecutive weekend of demonstrations. The fracas leading police to fire tear gas in attempts to disperse demonstrators near central Paris's Champs-Élysées Avenue. The yellow vest activists, originally motivated by rising fuel prices, have brought hundreds of thousands onto the streets over the past 3 months and are now trying to achieve electoral success. But the movement is politically divided and has no appointed leader. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
U.S. Special Representative for North Korea Stephen Biegun says the talks that wrapped up Friday in Pyongyang were productive, with all eyes now on the second U.S.-North Korea summit, set for February 27th and 28th. It is set to take place in Vietnam's capital of Hanoi. The Trump administration has missed a deadline to announce if it intends to impose further sanctions on Saudi Arabia for the killing of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. The Senate had directed President Trump to determine who is responsible for the death of Khashoggi by yesterday. Khashoggi was killed by Saudi agents in the kingdom's consulate in Istanbul in October. A bipartisan congressional conference committee continues working toward a border security deal, and there are indications the White House will end up accepting just a fraction of the money President Trump has demanded for his proposed southern border wall. Sources inside the committee say they expect funding for physical barriers to be around $1.6 billion, a figure Mr. Trump rejected in a bipartisan Senate bill last year. One anonymous White House aide said the president is expected to back whatever compromise emerges on Capitol Hill and acknowledged there is no will among congressional Republicans for another shutdown. This is VOA News. The United Nations is warning that the aid situation in Venezuela is critical. As VOA's Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, Venezuela's dicey political situation is exacting a heavy price.
The United Nations reports the humanitarian needs inside Venezuela are critical. It says more than half a dozen UN agencies have been scaling up activities to meet the urgent health, nutritional, and protection needs of the population since November. However, it says a shortage of money is hampering its operations. It notes less than half of the UN's $109.5 million appeal has been met. More than 50 metric tons of U.S. humanitarian aid is being blocked at the Colombia border by disputed Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, who says there is no humanitarian crisis in his country.
That was Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. The International Committee of the Red Cross says the Iraqi government faces enormous challenges, not only in rebuilding its battered country, but also regaining the trust of its people. The president of the ICRC is Peter Maurer.
In the aftermath of the war, there are still tensions in the society, which makes it very difficult to reconcile the Sunni and Shia and different ethnic and religious communities, which have been suffering at different periods of the conflict and different places of the conflict.
Maurer says the weakest members of society, women, children, and the elderly, are the biggest victims of suffering in Iraq. U.S. Special Representative Zalmay Khalilzad says talks with the Taliban have produced a tentative framework for an Afghanistan agreement, but he adds there is a long way to go. Khalilzad said he was hopeful a peace deal could be finalized before Afghanistan's presidential elections set for July. Turkey's president was among hundreds of mourners who attended a funeral Saturday for nine members of a family killed in Wednesday's apartment building collapse in Istanbul. The overall death toll stands at 17. Recep Tayyip Erdogan and other officials joined the funeral prayers for the Almadar family. Five other family members, including two children, remain hospitalized. The cause of the tragedy is under investigation, but authorities have said the top three floors of the eight-story structure were built illegally. Lawmakers in the U.S. state of Washington are considering a bill that would prohibit parents from claiming personal or philosophical exemptions to prevent their children from getting vaccinated against measles. This as the state grapples with an outbreak of the disease. Health officials have reported at least 52 known cases of measles in Washington and four cases in the neighboring state of Oregon. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Mpuga. Peter Kilote is away on assignment.
We need to address the root causes of conflict on the continent. We have to address inequality, poverty, and employment so that generates tension on the continent. A lot of political violence comes as a result of elections.
African leaders meet in Ethiopia to address problems with refugees, returnees, and internally displaced persons.
As women, we are being dehumanized. We are being degraded. We are being abused. How could you substitute human beings, especially women, the daughters and mothers of the nation, as a tourist attraction?
Some Ugandans mount pressure on the tourism minister to drop a strategy launched to promote curvy women as tourist attractions.
There haven't been many national surveys on this problem, but from other nations, substance use can, it's a combination of factors. It's a multifactorial problem.
And a group of concerned Zimbabweans start an anti-alcohol and drug campaign. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. Yes, African leaders and representatives of international organizations are in Ethiopia to address problems with refugees, returnees, and internally displaced persons. The number of displaced persons is rising in Africa due to conflict and political crisis. For VOA, Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says 17 million people on the African continent are displaced and most are fleeing violence. It is this kind of displacement that African leaders, government representatives and aid workers want to address at this year's summit in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Kabele Maltosa is the head of the African Union Commission on Political Affairs. He says the continent needs to tackle what he sees as the causes.
The majority of forcibly displaced persons are a result of violent conflict. So therefore, we need to address the root causes of conflict on the continent. We have to address inequality, poverty, and unemployment that generate tension on the continent. A lot of political violence comes as a result of elections. So we need to address the issue of elections to make sure that elections are democratic, credible, and peaceful.
This is the 50th anniversary of the convention that created the summit on refugees. The meeting is held as many African countries facing electoral problems, terrorism, and intercommunal fighting. UNHCR's representative to the African Union, Cosmas Chanda, says he hopes to see solutions that will make it easier for people to go back home.
We are talking about in excess of 17 million people who are displaced on the continent. That is by itself very depressing. We would like to see a situation in which people return to places where they normally stay. We would like to see a situation where further displacements are prevented. And we've been in the business of caring for displaced persons, including refugees, for a very long time, and we have never seen volumes climb to this level.
The UN says Uganda hosts 1.4 million refugees, the world's second largest refugee population after Turkey. Most refugees in Africa come from South Sudan, where 2.4 million people are displaced. The world's newest nation is third in the number of refugees after Syria and Afghanistan. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
And in Sierra Leone, the president has declared a national emergency because of the preponderance of rape and sexual violence in the country. Julius Maada Bio said anyone convicted of sexual violence against minors would face life in prison. A third of the more than 8,000 cases of sexual and gender-based violence reported in Sierra Leone last year involved a minor. The actual number of cases is thought to be higher. But discussions about sex crimes have generally been taboo in the West African country. The president said that government hospitals will provide free medical treatment to rape and sexual abuse victims. In addition, he said the Special Police Division for Rape and Sexual Violence Victims and the Special Magistrates Court will be launched to fast-track the cases. And some Ugandans are mounting pressure on the tourism minister to drop a strategy launched to promote Curvy women as tourist attractions. While some activists have asked the minister to apologize for what they term demeaning to women, others are calling for the minister's resignation. For VOA, Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
There is a story behind those curves, and that's the story we sell. That's the tourism.
It is those comments that Tourism Minister Godfrey Chiwanda made during the launch of the Miss Curvy contest that have drawn outrage from some activists. The minister launched the contest as one of the country's tourism projects. However, activists are accusing the minister of portraying women as objects of sex tourism. Pamela Kamugo is the chairperson of the Uganda Women Parliamentary Association. She said it's sad for the minister to objectify women.
I call upon the Honorable Minister to really halt the whole exercise. As women, we are being dehumanized. We are being degraded. We are being abused. How could you substitute human beings, especially women, the daughters and mothers of the nation, as a tourist attraction?
Mbwate Kamwagafa is a Ugandan legislator. He has described the curvaceous women tourism as immoral and dangerous for the Ugandan society.
But you cannot tell Ugandans that we are going to promote women with big bums, the hips. Is he going to put them in a cage such that when whoever is going to see them will come and view? Actually, we say you must apologize for what you've done.
Perry Alitua is a woman activist. She wants the minister to resign for promoting a campaign that's against the constitution.
It's against Article 33 of our constitution. The Article 33 is very clear that women shall be accorded equal dignity with men. It's derogatory, to say the least. For many of us, it's actually almost like promoting sex tourism, because what are you promoting behind those curves? And so for me, it's absurd, and he should actually resign.
A Ugandan woman, Primrose Murungi, has started an online petition to have the Miss Curvy Uganda contest cancelled. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
A group of concerned Zimbabweans have started an anti-alcohol and drug campaign targeting communities in which unemployed young people resort to drinking and using narcotics to alleviate the stress of not having work. As Columbus Mavinga reports for VOA from Harare, those involved in the campaign say the solution lies largely with improving the country's moribund economy.
Fewer than 3 in 10 young Zimbabweans have steady jobs. Many are idle and see no economic opportunity. For some, that leads to problems with alcohol and drugs. Church leaders, community leaders, and government officials have started warning youth of the impact of drug and alcohol abuse in Zimbabwe and its effects on their physical well-being and mental health. With the drug use growing in Zimbabwe, President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government has called for an all-stakeholders meeting on February 1 to come up with possible solutions. Zimbabwe's Deputy Director of Mental Health Services, Dr. Chidori Wafa, says the government cannot deal with the problem of substance abuse alone.
Alcohol and substance use is a rising problem in all of Africa and also in Zimbabwe, and it's become one of our top 3 diagnoses that we're seeing in our mental health units, so it's becoming a problem. We need a coordinated approach to this problem. It's a multi-sectoral problem, and we need a combined effort between government, between non-governmental organizations, with the community itself. There haven't been many national surveys on this problem, but from other nations, substance use can, it's a combination of factors. It's a multifactorial problem.
Youths are susceptible to peer pressure and can easily gain access to drugs, says Dr. Wafam. Once hooked on drugs, they also become more likely to engage in criminal activities. 20-year-old Takuzwa Mandija asked us not to film him when he was smoking cannabis. He says drug abuse would fall if more people could find employment.
The best way they can do is to just improve our country economically, such that all those people loitering in the streets will find jobs and will be focused. We are going nowhere. Even if we are to look kuma streets, there are some other people who are damaged. 50% of the youths in the streets, they can't even work. Their life are to distract from animal drugs and so forth and the likes. It's not because they want drug abuse.
Roman Catholic priest Claudi Maganga is trying to reduce substance abuse by youths by keeping them busy and offering counseling.
Within our hall, the way it is structured, upstairs we are creating what we call a study center for the young people. And then we have the computers, we have people to come for research, to remove all these young people to come and do researches, have time to interact within the church. We've also started what we call the sports for the young people. We've created volleyball pitch. We've created also a netball pitch here as well for the young people that when they are free, during their free time, they can be engaged in sports everywhere here. So at least with that, we are removing them from being just idle.
While that may help, when young people have finished playing, they still find themselves unemployed and in the same conditions youths like Takuzwa Mandija say make them to drugs. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Years since the Rwanda genocide, messages of ethnic discrimination similar to those that triggered the genocide are reportedly still flowing on some social media platforms. Eugene Uyumana reports for VOA from Kigali.
25 years passed since the genocide happened over 100 days in 1994. The atrocity killed more than a million Tutsis and moderate Hutus. But messages of ethnic discrimination similar to what triggered the genocide still flow on some social media platforms and websites. The executive secretary of the National Commission for the Fight Against the Genocide, Jean Damascene Bizimana, says though the commission works closely with the cybersecurity organs, telecom companies have proven to be a harder. We are going to work hand in hand with the cybersecurity organs. But there is a big challenge because in most of the cases, the telecom companies, managers, and foreigners don't understand Kinyarwanda. We are now urging them to hire agents who know Kinyarwanda, who can verify and prevent ethnic discrimination messages to circulate. Because the only way of fighting that cybercrime is to block those messages. Rwanda is preparing to mark the 25th anniversary of the genocide. Though several measures to reunite Rwandans have been put in place, many Rwandans at home and abroad are determined to deny it happened. Bizimana Damascene says some have even founded associations of deniers. He says the internet plays a big role in their activities. To be united is to feel that the country belongs to all Rwandans. By the genocide deniers are some children of genocide perpetrators. Some have founded associations of explaining that there were two genocides. There is one operating in Belgium called Jambo Asbera. To disseminate genocide ideology and discrimination is a great tool to their activities. Our youth have to be alert. However, the Rwanda government has pursued many efforts to reunite Rwandans. There is still a hidden wound of ethnic discrimination on both sides, the victims and the perpetrators. For Bishop John Ruchahana, the president of the Unity and Reconciliation Commission, youth who are writing ethnic discrimination messages on social media platforms express what their parents breastfed them.
Children say what they hear from their fathers and mothers. Because children are like angels, they say whatever they hear. They can't hide ideology like their parents.
Leading up to the anniversary, a series of meetings will aim at sensitizing youth about unity and reconciliation. The National Institution of Research shows that 69% of all Rwandans are youth. For the government, this figure means much in healing the Rwandan society. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
When babies are tired of looking at something, they look away from it. You wouldn't think there would be a difference between deaf babies and babies who can hear in absorbing information about what they see. But as we hear from VOA's Carol Pearson, researchers have found otherwise.
Macy Kinney is talking to her infant son, Zealand. Because he was born deaf, Kinney knew she would have to find ways for him to learn without spoken language.
They have baby signing times that we look up, and he'll watch them, and we'll do, like, the colors and his name.
Studies show that deaf children don't perform as well on visual tasks that test memory and attention as children who can hear. In the first study to explore cognitive differences between deaf and hearing infants, researchers at Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center tested how they processed visual objects by showing them pictures of objects on a screen. Claire Monroy, one of the researchers, says visual habituation, taking in information about what we see, is the earliest known form of reasoning and understanding.
When infants start to get bored as they encode a stimulus, they then start to look away from it.
Monroy worked on the study with Derek Houston, director of the Baby Talk Research Labs at the medical center.
The faster a child can process the visual information, the quicker they'll habituate to it.
Houston and Monroy found that deaf babies looked at the objects on the screen longer than babies who could hear.
Many people assume that deaf infants and children compensate for the lack of hearing by being better at processing visual things, or that their visual attention is enhanced. And actually, these findings show the opposite.
So what does this mean? Houston says there's no certainty, but...
This might mean that they pay more attention, not necessarily because they are slower at visual processing, but it might be because they are actually processing more about the visual object.
Monroy says the most important thing the study showed is that there are significant differences in basic intellectual abilities at a very young age. This suggests that hearing loss leads to a change in the way these babies develop intellectually in early infancy. This information might eventually lead to finding ways to help deaf children reach their full potential. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Last year, South Africa embarked on efforts to reform its land holdings, and the economic upside of doing it successfully could be significant. Getting more land into the hands of black farmers would increase incomes for thousands of families, but there are risks, and reform done badly could set the economy back for years. For VOA, Darren Taylor reports on the potential for financial impact.
Some economists warn that South Africa's economy could implode if the government abruptly takes white farmers' land to redistribute. They say it could trigger the collapse of the rand and a dramatic decrease in food production. Azar Jamin is head of the economic consulting firm Econometrics. He says the mere announcement that the ruling African National Congress wanted to take white-owned land killed off a nascent economic recovery by scaring off both domestic and foreign investment.
The acrimony surrounding the whole issue, which has involved a lot of emotions, has done a lot of damage to business and consumer confidence. Some would say it's even led to some emigration. of skilled people from the country.
Land prices have decreased 30% since the start of the year, when the ANC said it would turn to expropriating land without compensation if needed. Professor Ferdi Meyer is the director of the country's Bureau for Food and Agricultural Policy. He says equity in land possession must happen, given that white farmers still control more than 70% of the best commercial farmland. But, he says, the ANC's announcement couldn't have come at a worse time, with unemployment approaching 30%, a recession battering the country, and tax revenue at an all-time low.
In this period where we want to do the land reform, we need to acknowledge that the profit margins and agriculture margins are under pressure. Money has run out, government finances are tight, and
Mayor points out that farming is still suffering the aftermath of a drought, the listeria disease that infected certain meat products, and low grain prices. He says those problems must be considered as the government looks for ways to help more black South Africans become commercial farmers. Mayor says the long list of hardships white farmers face, including the possibility that they'll lose their land, means they're not investing as much in their businesses as they should. He notes one table grape farm he has studied where the owner is not planting new vines.
The potential loss over the next 10 years, 40% drop in exports, 30% drop in employment. That's the type of reality that we're facing if we stop investment in the farm. So that's why we need to get it right. We need to get the policies right and incentives right to avoid this. We need to have a sustainable food system based on a fair and just land reform model.
Jamin says that outcome is within relatively easy reach. A good starting point for the government, he says, would be to grant title deeds to the estimated 20 million smallhold and subsistence farmers. The state and various tribal councils currently own the land these farmers work. That means they can't use the land title as collateral for loans for seed and equipment.
If one were to unleash the ability to hold title within so many millions of people, you could suddenly see a dramatic unraveling of wealth in South Africa that could see the economy booming strongly.
As yet, there's no land reform proposal before Parliament. President Cyril Ramaphosa has assured local and international business leaders the government's plan will respect property rights. Even so, the possibility of expropriating land without paying white owners remains on the table. That disconnect, says Jamin, does nothing but harm to South Africa's efforts to attract new investment. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we'll discuss measles as countries such as Madagascar and the United States are grappling with the disease. For your questions or comments, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
It's the weekend, and whatever you're doing, you could use a little extra love. Music love, that is. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa, and I've got the perfect weekend show for you.
I just called to say I love you.
First, over 30 minutes of the continent's best pan-African music, commercial free. Second, song of the week, Janjo by Daju. And then two exclusive interviews with artist Soul Prayer from Harare, Zimbabwe, and Free Boy from Kano, Nigeria.
Anywhere I go, I am the number one.
It's your boy, Free Boy Sani, DJ Blando on the beat, Duma Records.
So, lots of music love coming your way. Don't miss it. Music Time in Africa, this Sunday, 5 minutes past the hours of 15 and 2000 UTC.
This is VOA and you're listening to Nightline Africa, and coming up in the second half of the program, our Saturday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent. And now it's time for our Saturday music spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great music from Africa. Calibrating, I need you. Even when you're wrong or right, I cannot be satisfied. I just wanna hold you tight and feel alright. Girl, I no regret. Even though every day we dey fight, girl, I still adore you. I still adore you. I appreciate. Since I set my eyes on you, yeah, you neck me out. You freak me out and you neck me out. Especially for me, but you be baby, baby. And even you know I said, my love for you is so real, yeah, not even maybe. Boy, you are the captain of my ship. Baby, when you are shower me, I love to be. All the promises, yes, me I keep. The ring in your finger, my love is not cheap. Boy, yeah, you give me joy every day. Yeah, yeah, you make me happy every day. The other wrong, you told me, don't me promise to the right. Girl, I forever now my arms, me I hold you so tight. Oh, yeah. Girl, you give me joy every day. Every day. Girl, you make me happy every day. Girl, I no regret. Even though every day we dey fight, girl, I still adore you. I still adore you. I appreciate. Since I set my eyes on you, yeah, you neck me out. You pick me out and you neck. Anything that she wants, we go gada gada. And she knows say a dapa dapa. Guarantee day, money day, every day. So I say, my baby have no fear. If trouble go come every day, but better people no care. And me no send them. So I say, my baby have no fear. If trouble go come every day, but better people no care. And me no send them. Girl, I no regret. Even though every day we dey fight, girl, I still adore you. I still adore you. I appreciate. Since I set my eyes on you, yeah, you neck me out. You freak me out and you neck me out.
Together, fight together. kapotea. Mina wewe ni marafiki toka zamani. Siwezi kukudanganya. Nia yangu kukulinda toka nana mwizi. Mwizi wa mapenzi. Mpita njia. Mpita njia.
in a battle. You know that I love you, baby. I'm phoning one more, yeah, I want you, baby. I'll go do anything for you. Stand beside me, my baby, I've been thinking about you. What is it that you done to me, oh? Eh, jalunga tabanga, lala teta ngawe. Did you pour me a love potion, oh? My baby, I can't stop thinking about you. Undenza ntoni, oh? Kuthenga lale busuku, oh? Esithandwa sami, undenza ntoni wo kuthenga lale busuku esithandwa sami, baby, I've been thinking about you.
That I need, baby, it's you. Oh, yeah. I cannot imagine life without you. Stand by someone, I'm thinking about you. Dikala ni teta, ni teta ngawe. Kala ni pupa ngawe. Oh, yeah. Only this ain't all enough. I just can't stop thinking about you. Baby, all I want is you. Baby, there's no one but you. Go by, you give me the juice. You bring me the juice. On dance, I'm turning now. I just can't stop thinking about you. On dance, I'm turning now. Kuthenga lale busuku.
Why, 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 why Baby.
Yes, that was Oliver Ngoma with Bunny. And that was our Saturday Music Spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. From the rest of the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor Shaka Salim, Producer Saida Hamdun, we thank you for joining us tonight and join us tomorrow Sunday. I'm Douglas Mpuga.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall.